Good morning. Today we're going to start the sugya of Arevus. An Arev is a guarantor, a person who's looking to borrow money. The lender simply doesn't trust the borrower, can't post collateral. So the lender tells the borrower that go find yourself an Arev, someone who's going to guarantee the loan, that if you don't pay, I have someone else to pursue. So halacha is that if a person is mekabel arvus, he agrees to be a guarantor, he then becomes liable for the loan. Now, although the halacha in Hilchos Arvus discusses it in the context of a loan, someone a guarantee, nevertheless, as we're going to see, this is a very useful halacha that comes up throughout Choshen Mishpat. And the reason for that is that if you think about it, when a person's a guarantor, why in the world should he have to pay the lender? What creates this obligation? So as we've gone through many times, in Choshen Mishpat, to create an obligation, to do anything, you generally need a kinyan. You have to do some sort of action, some sort of ma'isa kinyan, in order to create a eschaivos. In Arev, as we will see, seems to be an exception. A guarantor didn't get anything. He's not the borrower. Someone who borrows money has to repay it because he has the lender's money. The guarantor got nothing. The money went to the borrower. The guarantor also, in most cases, does not need any ma'isa kinyan. Simply by telling the lender, "I will be an arev, go lend it, and I will pay, and I will guarantee it." Very often, that is enough. And therefore, there are many cases where there's a business deal, there's a transaction where someone gives his word. There's no kinyan, there's no contract, and therefore there's no easy way to be mechayev him. So very often the poskim will deal or bring out the halachos of Hilchos Arevus as a way to be mechayev people, hold them responsible for their words, even in the absence of a ma'isa kinyan. Now, as we're going to see, there are quite a number of conditions to Hilchos Arevus, so this is easier said than done, but it is an important halacha, and that comes up in many different contexts. So let's begin. The first interesting halacha about an arev is the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Kuf Tes says, the Gemara gives a list of three things that a person should do and three things that a person should avoid. One of the things that a person should avoid, the Gemara says, is arevus. Should not sign as an arev. And the Pesachim explain, when you sign as an arev, you're creating very real exposure. If the borrower doesn't pay, you're going to have to pay the lender. Not only that, when you pay the lender, it's going to be very difficult for you to actually recover any funds from the borrower. Because why did the lender come to you? He came to you because the borrower defaulted. If the borrower defaulted, you're the guarantor, you're going to end up paying for the borrower. You are then going to have to try to recover for someone who's already defaulted. It's easier said than done. And therefore, when a person signs arevus, he agrees to guarantee a loan, he has very significant exposure. Although this is a Gemara Mefureshes, interestingly enough, when the Rambam brings down this halacha, it's brought down in Hilchos Deyos as the hanhaga of a Talmud Chacham. In other words, for a regular person, the Rambam is silent whether a person should or should not accept arevus. However, he says a Talmud Chacham, there's a list of things that a Talmud Chacham should be very careful about. He should be honest. He should pay his bills on time, and he should never become an arev. So the Rambam seems to have learned that this is not Mikra Hadin, but it's Hanhaga of a Talmud Chacham. The Shlah brings down in very strong Lashonos that he's Mujba Me'avoisov, never to become an arev for anybody. Now, this being said, it certainly is a tremendous chesed. And if a person needs the money, he needs to borrow the money, he's an ani, and he cannot obtain a loan without an arev, so agreeing to become an arev is certainly a mitzvah of v'chazakta. You can help a person's parnasa, you can help a person avoid coming on to other people. But it can only be done if you're prepared to make good on the arevus. If you're prepared that if the borrower defaults, you're going to take the money out of your pocket and you're going to pay up. And in all likelihood, you're going to have to, you will never recover from it. You'll end up taking the loss. It depends. If you do it meikara, every time you lend money, there's an interesting question. In theory, if you lend money to an ani, or you lend someone and he's now an ani, he can't pay you back. So just like if he knocks on your door and says, listen, my business is bad, I need money, I have many chayvus, can you give me tzedakah so I can repay my debts? The halacha is, you give him, certainly that counts towards your tzedakah. So conceptually, if you lend someone money, and now he won't repay you, you should be able to write it off. Now the problem that creates is now every person, or every bank for that matter, that lends out money, so never has to give tzedakah. Because there always, unfortunately, will be some defaults. So every time there's a default, he's now an ani. So now write off the money. Say, this is my chiv tzedakah. I'm kind of my meiser with all the charged off debt. So the place can say that that's not going to work. Because if at the time you lent the money, he was an usher. It wasn't being given as tzedakah. He wasn't worthy to take tzedakah. It was being given to him either as a chesed or as a business deal. So the fact that now he can't pay you back, the debt now isn't worth anything. Or worth a minimum amount. So being moichel, the $10,000 debt that you weren't going to get paid anyway, is not the equivalent of taking $10,000 out of your pocket and giving it to tzedakah. So therefore, in a case where when you gave the money, he was an usher, it was given either as a chesed or as a business deal, and then it sours, you can't write it off. On the other hand, if an ani comes to you, and you know good and well when he comes to you, that he may or may not pay you back, and you're giving him the loan as a nice way of giving him tzedakah, maybe you'll get it back, but if not, it's also fine. This is a way to support him. And your kavana from the beginning is that this is you're giving it from your meiser. So that would work. Now, presumably, if in a similar situation where an ani needs to borrow money and you accept arvus with that intention, then I'm going to pay this from my tzedakah funds, then enoch nami. Okay, that's true, although there are many commercial loans that are given to people who are anything but aniyim, but banks are try to be as conservative and protect themselves as much as possible. So it might be an indication, but I wouldn't, I would look in a little further before jumping to that conclusion. Okay, I don't know if it's closer or not, but I think the bottom line is if when the loan is extended, he's an ani, and you're doing it with the intent to pay for meiser, I think that certainly would be okay.
I understand. If somebody comes to me for a loan, that is the greatest test in Kesef Talbot, right?
Right.
If someone comes to me because I need you to co-sign so that I can get a loan, then all of a sudden it's a...
You shouldn't do it. Enochanami. That's a very good point. The way I understand it is based on this Peleoyitz. When people sign Arevus, anyone who's involved with gemachs or involved with loans, it's a very unfortunate problem, is that people will sign as an arev with the bitachon that they'll never have to pay out. At one point I ran a small gemach, and I think the maximum loan size was either $500 or $700. It wasn't a very large gemach, but they required two arevim. So at one point, after running it for a couple of years, someone came and borrowed money. And looking at the document, the Areven, the names sounded vaguely familiar. Though Reuven was a borrower, and Shimon and Levi were the guarantors. The names sounded a bit familiar, so I started going through my records, seeing where I saw these names before. So sure enough, I found that there had been a loan a few weeks ago to a fellow, to Shimon, and the two guarantors were Levi and Reuven. There was a third loan to Levi, and the two guarantors were Reuven and Shimon. So that point confronted the borrower and said, I don't understand. Forget that. You're borrowing the money, I understand. You need the money. But how could you sign as a guarantor for those other two loans that went out a few weeks ago? So he looked at me and said, I don't understand. I'm the best guarantor there is. I'm a great credit risk. Because if there's ever a default, I have two built-in guarantors that can go to another gemach. So in a case like that, where you have a guarantee... What?
No end to it.
No end to it, correct. In a case like that, where people are signing as guarantors, and they themselves are aniyim, they have no way to make good on it, if there's a default, that's certainly a novel. And in fact, the Peleoyitz adds, and he says, and I believe it's very true, he says, in many ways, the fact of life is there always will be some people who borrow money and can't pay back. Now, sometimes it's because of negligence. Sometimes it's an inus. They borrowed, obviously when they borrow the money, it's because they have a cash flow problem. They were hoping it's temporary, they had all sorts of plans, good intentions. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And that's one of the reasons why lending money is such a big chesed. There's a certain element of risk. And that we can understand. In Arev, what is an Arev doing? An Arev is saying, I want to do a chesed to the borrower. Now he needs the money, I want to help him out. What's my chesed going to be? I'm going to convince the lender, give him the money, and then if it ever comes to it, I'm not going to pay. So Bishleim, if you're borrowing money, so you're borrowing because you need it, you need to feed your children. So whether you're a little bit optimistic or not, avla not, we can understand. But to go ahead and to become an arev, where you're basically doing a chesed to the borrower at the expense of the lender, that's a tremendous avla. If he's not going to pay. The Pelel Yoyed says an arev that doesn't pay is worse than a borrower that doesn't pay. With the intention of paying, then yes. If he's prepared to do it, it's not al-khayr, it's the same way lending money is a chesed, you're helping the person use it, so it has the same thing, but you have to be prepared to go ahead and pay and take that loss. In a regular case, where you're not expecting to pay, and if you do pay, you're going to have charat on being an arev in the first place. If you're going in meikaro, this is a way to do a chesed, and you're exposing yourself to the risk and you're accepting it, then again, it's a chesed. But if you're doing it with the expectation you won't have to pay, and then when you do pay, now you're all fatayr on the borrower and you have charata that you went into it, that's something that should be avoided.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I don't think that's irresponsible if a person knows. If it's an amount that he can easily get.
Yeah, if he's prepared to pay, if you sign as an arev with the expectation, I'm doing this because I'm willing to backstop it. If the borrower has a problem, I'm going to pay out of my pocket. It's a beautiful chesed. But if it's done with the expectation, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, either you'll have to scramble, either you will or won't scramble for the money, and you'll be all fatayin, then it's something that should be avoided. It should only be done when you're ready and able to pay it out and write it off as a chesed or as tzedakah.
The regular halva too, the mala anticipates the loan, that would be after debt.
Hmm?
If it's saying a regular lender
right.
Also anticipates that he'll get the money back. He knows there's a risk element, but he assumes, right?
Right, but the lender, he gives them. Right, but the lender, the money is out, and there's not. And he knows good and well, as soon as the check is cashed, that he hopes to see it back. But it's a hope. In Arev, it's very easy to sign arvas, and you can have people who sign arvas on tremendous. It's not out of pocket, right? And it's just he can have bitach and everything will be fine. It doesn't hurt. Then a few years later, when the economy crashes, and suddenly all the people who you signed arvas for all crash at the same time. You can end up with a problem.
Let's say you have a situation. Let's just say I have a landlord who comes, who asks me to be an arev. So I know that if they do come to me, I can just withhold the rent for a couple of months.
Erchanam. If you have a mashkin, in other words, if the person gives collateral, in your case it's not technically a mashkin, but it's the equivalent of a mashkin, then encham, correct. You have recourse, and you've now limited your exposure. Unless you get evicted at the same time as a default, you're okay. You do have to realize if there's a default, he may have defaulted on the mortgage as well, which means you may end up both homeless and penniless at the same time, which is not a good combination. Okay, so this being said, this is the introduction. Let's talk about what exactly an arev is. Now, interestingly, in halacha, we find three different types of arev. The first type, which is the strongest type, which is called an arev shloiv dutz, which is uncommon today, is there were some arevim, and it seems that in Bidinehem, in the Goyish law, this was the default, was that if a person accepted arvas, he accepted responsibility on a loan, the lender had to go after the arev only. And he had no claim against the borrower. It's an extreme case where a person goes over to someone and says, give money to that person and I'm going to pay you back, where it's being lent completely on the credit and on the say-so of the arev. then in many cases, there's absolutely no claim against the borrower. It's an Arev Shleif Dutz. The claim is only against the Arev. He has primary responsibility. Now, we're not going to spend much time on this because this is fairly uncommon. The second type of class of Arev is what's known as an Arev Koblin. An Arev Koblin is where the Koblin tells the lender, ten loy vaniyate, give the money to the borrower and I will return it to you. And Arev Koblin, both parties have joint responsibility. The lender, joint in several actually, the lender can choose who to go after. He can go after the borrower for the money, or if he chooses, he can leave the borrower alone, go straight after the guarantor. Correct. And it's any given, when it's due, he can either knock on the borrower's door or he can knock on the Arev's door. He has no responsibility whatsoever to make an attempt to collect money from the borrower first. Both of them have primary responsibility. You do not have any obligation to pursue the borrower first. Now, in practice, most guarantees that you see today, certainly on a residential mortgage, but if you read through the documents, very often the co-signers, today they're called co-borrowers. It's even a stronger language. But in general, the lending institution has the right to go after the guarantor immediately. Commercial loans are very often different because the loan is to an entity and the person is just a guarantor. But in a residential, when you're dealing with individuals, the documents typically allow the bank to pursue either party, which would be the equivalent of an Arev Koblin. The third type of Arev, which is really the default in halacha, when you say Arev, it means an Arev Stam, a regular Arev. So when an Arev Stam, what happens is that you first have to go after the borrower. The borrower, the one that received the money, he has primary responsibility. If there's a default, if he doesn't pay, he doesn't have any money, then and only then does the guarantor's obligation kick in. But by an Arev Stam, by a regular Arev, you first go after the borrower, and only when you're unable to collect from him do you have the right to escalate and go to the guarantor. Now, although this sounds like a very reasonable setup, the borrower is the one that has the money, go after him first. The guarantor is just there as a backstop. But an Arev Stam creates very significant challenges in practice. And the reason for that is that when you have an Arev Stam, if there's a default, it's not enough that the borrower simply missed a payment. You have to go after him. You have to foreclose on any asset that he has. If he has any real estate, if he has any even personal belongings, you have to first bring him to Beis Din and take process all the way, make every attempt possible to get the borrower to pay up. It's only when there's a complete default, either the borrower skips town, or he has absolutely does not have a penny to his name, at that point, the Arev's obligation kicks in, and you can go after the guarantor. What? Correct. Whatever the difference is. Correct. But first, you have to go after the borrower for his entire net worth. Now, this creates a very serious problem. First of all, in practice, as anyone who's been involved in litigation, whether in Beis Din or foreclosures, knows, it's a process. It takes a lot of time and effort to go ahead, get the borrower into a din Torah, go through the collection process, and collect whatever assets are available. But then there's a more fundamental problem. What is the halacha? We've discussed a few years ago in Hilchos Gevuyos Chayiv. What's the halacha if a person doesn't pay back his debts? Halacha is, you bring him to Beis Din, and misajin lebal chayiv. We go ahead and we take away whatever assets he has in order to satisfy the debt. What is the borrower entitled to keep for his personal use? In other words, do we take every penny, throw him out of his house, take away his clothing, and leave him, you know, without any food, without any house, without any clothing? How far do we go? So the halacha is, misajin lebal chayiv, we go pretty far. We take away everything except, at most, we leave him 12 months rent. We make him sell his house. We only give it at most, again, to Malchagos, but we'll leave him with 12 months rent. We leave him with his food for 30 days, clothing for a year, but also very basic clothing, some say not even Shabbos clothing. We take away all of his personal his furniture, we take away all of his personal belongings, anything which is not absolutely necessary for his parnasa, and we leave him with almost nothing. Not only that, but as we discussed, even these limited exclusions are only for him. For his family, he has no right to say, I need food for my family for the next 30 days. Because while certainly a person has a chiv to feed his family, but he can feed his family with other people's money. And therefore, we only allow him these minimal exclusions for himself, not for his family. So technically in halacha, we can take a borrower, make him sell off all the furniture in the house, leave him one bed, one chair, a small table, a spoon, a knife, almost nothing. Now in practice, that never happens. In practice, a lender will never go ahead and ask the Beis Din to follow through with a strict halacha and to go ahead and put all of his belongings on eBay. So in theory, an Arev can always say, my responsibility is after you collect everything you can, you come to me. But if that person has assets, you want to be a nice guy, you don't want to go ahead and demand what you're entitled to LP Din, it's very commendable, and I would hope I would do the same. But that's your problem, not mine. I don't have to pay out money because you want to leave the borrower with more than he's entitled to. And therefore, technically, the Arev can always say, until you go ahead and take every penny, all this misandrin, don't bother me. That he still has assets. Let him take those assets. Don't come after me. Now, obviously, if it's a very large debt, this argument won't be so relevant, because if the assets are worth a minimal amount, so it won't be a shield on everything. But in a smaller debt, this would be a, at least on paper, should be a good argument. Now that being said, there's a Tshuvas Marsham, and the Kisei Mishpat, Rav Tauber goes with this. He says that today you cannot use this defense. Because although technically in halacha this should be true, since everyone knows that misandrin today does not happen, no lender has ever asked a Beis Din to take the borrower, auction off all the furniture, take all of his children's clothing. It just doesn't happen. So because the practice today is not to go with the full halachos of misandrin, the practice today is to leave him with significantly more than he's entitled to al-pi halacha. Therefore, there's an umdino demuchach that when you accept arvus, even in Arev Stam, even though you have secondary liability, however, we do not hold you to the standards of misandrin, and all the lender will have to do is he will have to foreclose on any available assets. He will have to bring the borrower to Beis Din and recover whatever there is that reasonably can be recovered. But at that point, you can go after the guarantor, and at that point, the guarantor would have liability even if he is an Arev Stam. Correct. Correct. With difficulty. And this is a challenge that Beis Din will have. Actually, Rav Tauber has an interesting point. He wants to know what happens if there's a fight between the borrower and the lender. They have a fight, and they go to a Din Torah, and they sign for Pshara, and Beis Din makes a Pshara. Beis Din's psak is not based on Din, it's based on Pshara. Is the Arev responsible for that? And after the Pshara, this happens all the time, after they make a Pshara, the borrower says, okay, good Pshara, but ainly, I can't pay you. So now you go after the guarantor. The guarantor says, wait a second. I guaranteed the loan. And if he owes money on this loan, I have to pay him. But the psak doesn't say he owes money on this loan. The psak says they came, and they agreed to accept a pshara. And this is the pshara that the Beis Din decided on. How, if the pshara is not based on din, it's based on sveikus or what they felt was right, then an Arev is not responsible for this person's pshara. And therefore, in such a case, where the Beis Din took other things into account, it's not clear that the money was really owed, also, the guarantor would not be responsible for this, even though there is, quote-unquote, a psak din against the borrower.
If
the
result, obviously, it was a real loan took place.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And if the Arev says, I want you to make a pshara, wonderful. But if the Arev comes after the fact, The lender comes to the Arev with a psak din from the Bezdin that says, we made this pshara. The Arev can say, listen, it's very nice you made a pshara, but the borrower can't make a pshara with my money. And therefore, you have to establish al pi din this money is owed, not just a pshara based on whatever factors, whatever is the Bezdin felt was fair. And I agree with you. What he asks for every pshara is you know, it's a gamble. If you undo the pshara and now you ask for a din, you may end up behind. But that's a risk or a gamble that the Arev is entitled to take. The borrower can't make that decision for the Arev without his haskama.
Get rid of all this, and they can say, if the borrower doesn't respond, you are responsible. Now, I'm assuming that is a pretty standard condition.
As we mentioned, there are three types of arev, and the parties can choose in advance which one they have. Now, typically, in a gemach that's been around a little bit and knows a little bit of hilchos arev, knows if you write just, I am an arev, I'm a guarantor, then in halacha you have serious exposure. Because an arev stam, if you're a regular guarantor, has this secondary liability and you have to go after the borrower first. What they will typically say is that it will be very clear that you have an arev kavlan, that middle category, and usually the documents today are very explicit. They say, I can go after the guarantor directly, I don't have to go after, even if the borrower has money. They're usually very clear, but it's true. If you just write, I am Hareini Arev, or a language like that, without any other explanation, in halacha, you have very serious exposure. There was a gemach, actually. It was a friend of mine ran a gemach. This is actually a rather large gemach. They had done a huge volume of loans. So when I started learning Chayesh Mishpat, I was curious to see how they protect themselves. So I asked him, can I see the shtar, the document and the contract that you use that you protect all of your interests? So he pulled out a business card and he showed me. It was one sentence. It said, ten loy v'ani etein. And a signature line underneath. And that's it. No, ten loy v'ani etein is a lashon of a kavlan. We'll get to the lashonos probably not today, but we'll get to that next week, what language. This is a lashon of a kavlan. But I was amazed. He had been running the gemach for many years. And again, this business card, Tan Loi Vani Etain, he had never lost a dime. It was a beautiful, Baruch Hashem, there still are some honest people in honest communities. I would not recommend this, that you try this at home. It's kedai to be well protected. But in halakha, that's all you need. Tan Loi Vani Etain is a lashon of kablonis, and that will cover you. But if you write Hareini Arev, or I'm a kabbalah arvus, then you only have a secondary liability, and it's going to be very difficult to collect.
Does the one who collects from the borrower, does he have any responsibility to then try to go back, or then he's off the hook and just
No, once the lender collects from the Arev, now it is the Arev's problem to go after the borrower, which in practice is very difficult, because generally the reason why the Arev had to pay is because the borrower defaulted in the first place. But now the Arev has every right to pursue the borrower and to get paid if the funds are available. He's out. The reason why you're an Arev is so that if there's a problem, it's your problem, not the lender's problem. So the Arev pays, and then at that point, the Arev steps into the lender's shoes, and he has to go after the borrower to try to recover what he laid out. Okay, very good. So very good. Okay, so let's now lead into what I alluded to before. How do you create an Arvus? Normally, you want to buy something. You need a kinyan, mashicha, hagbah, payment, depending on the type of thing it is. You have to do some sort of action, the kinyan, for it to become yours. In hilchos mazik, you take a brick, you throw it, smash someone's window. So you destroyed something, you damaged something. You're responsible for the damage that you caused. A borrower, he takes the money. When you take the money, you're responsible to return it. Where do the obligations of an Arev come in? What did he do? He just said, I'm an Arev. What kind of chiyuv is this? What kind of kinyan is this? Now, on top of that, even if there would be a kinyan, there's another challenge. And that is, we discussed by Rikos when we went through Hilchos Asmachta. If I make a bet with you that if my team wins the game, you'll pay me $1,000. If your team wins, I'll pay you. So, person, that's a gamble. That's an asmachta. Even if you would be makabel kinyan, in most cases, you will not have to pay. Because it's an asmachta. You were expecting or hoping that you'd win the gamble. You didn't really mean to spend the money. And therefore, unless you gave the money in advance or certain conditions are met, asmachta is loikanya. In Arev, a guarantor is expecting and hoping he'll never have to pay. So besides for the fact there's no kinyan, he didn't do anything, but we also have the problem of this asmachta. He was hoping not to, he was expecting not to pay. So if we hold asmachta loikanya, how and why can we hold a guarantor liable for the default? So the Gemara says that we learn out asmachta, the concept of an iris from the Torah. We actually learn it out from with Yehuda and Binyamin, Anoichi Aravenu, where Yehuda said, give me Binyamin and Miyadi Tivakshenu, I'll take care of it. I'll bring him back, and if not, it's my responsibility. Now, there was no kinyan there. But what you see is that if you tell someone to be Moitiyo Toyos Alpi, if you tell someone, go spend money, put your money at risk, and I'll be good for it, so that itself, without any kinyan, can create an obligation. And the Gemara explains this by hi hano. Because this lender is holding on to the money. He's not ready to risk it and give it to the borrower. On your say-so, because you told him, give it to him and I'll make sure you get it back, he trusted your word, and based on your say-so, he went ahead, he put his money at risk. That action, the fact that he put his money at risk, he was willing to trust you, that action is called a hana. And even without any further kinyan, that's enough to create a chiyuv. So although there's no physical action that takes place, the very fact that he put money at risk on your say-so, that enough can create a chiyuv, even though there's an asmachta. Okay, hold on, we'll get to that. So because of this, whenever the Arev tells the lender, go lend him the money, and if there's a problem, I'll pay you back. Since the lender is trusting the Arev, he's relying on him, that's enough to create a chiyuv. Now, based on this, there's a very important limitation. What happens if a person lends money, and after he lent the money, he starts getting nervous? You know, this borrower is shaky, his business is going down, I'm hearing some rumors. He goes to the borrower and says, you know, I'm getting nervous, I want to get paid. So the borrower says, okay, I'm going to get you an Arev. And someone comes along and says, I'm guaranteeing this loan. Now in that case, did the lender advance the money or put the money at risk because of the Arev say-so? No, he lent the money a month ago. If the Arev comes l'achar matan mois, if the loan was already extended and afterwards the guarantor is saying, don't worry, you get nervous, don't worry, I'll pay it back. That's Dibur Baalma. It's just words. There's no action. There's no reliance. The lender didn't do anything based on his say-so. And therefore, in that case, you do not become an Arev unless you're Mekabel Kenya. Yeah, so very, very good. It's like this. If it's before the due date, then nothing happened. It's just words, it's Dibur Baalma, everyone agrees, or at least La Halacha, it's not going to work. There is a discussion, the Minchas Pita brings down from the Maknes Simin Chav Ches, that perhaps when it's Arvach Le'Zimne, where it's due, and the lender and the guarantor says to the lender, extend the loan for another 6 months, and I'll be an Arev. So perhaps the extension itself is considered putting yourself at risk, and that might be enough. Now, wait a second. Two things. First of all, if it's not an extension, if it's due, and you're trying to collect it, and the Arev says, I'm going to be an Arev, that everyone agrees is not enough. Because it was due, it's at risk already, you're trying to get it back unsuccessfully. The fact that he just told you, don't worry, I'll be an Arev, that itself will not be enough. The question is, if the Arev says, give him a 6 months extension, so then perhaps giving him permission to hold it another 6 months and not claiming it for this time period, that might be enough to the equivalent of being Moitzei Tos Alpiv. The Sefer HaMakna is Mesupik. Most poskim do, at the end of the day, say it is not enough. And they say when you take cash out of your pocket, and the money is spent on your say-so, that's called a real hana. However, if it's already gone, the same way in 6 months, right now you're trying to collect, in 6 months you can try to collect. It's not really a greater risk, or I mean, it's more time, but it's not a material enough hana or hemne, and therefore according to most poskim, that would not be enough. Now what's interesting is, in one case where you do find the svara brought down the halacha, is a person sold merchandise, but he told the buyer, I don't know who you are. I don't want to give you credit. So ultimately the buyer said, okay, I'll find you a guarantor. The seller allowed the buyer to take possession of the goods on the condition he bring him a guarantor. So here we have an interesting case. Is that koydim out? And now the guarantor signed after the goods were delivered, but before they were actually sold. So is this called before Matan Mois or after Matan Mois? On one hand, if you want to know, technically speaking, who had possession of the goods, the buyer already had the goods. And therefore, the seller, to a certain extent, trusted him, and it was that boat already left the harbor. The goods were no longer under his control. On the other hand, it's true the buyer had the goods, but who owned them? They were given al tanai. They didn't really become the buyers until he fulfilled the condition, until he brought an Ariv. And therefore, the Chazei HaTanufa and the Tshuvas HaRash as well, both say that a guarantor, even though the buyer already had possession of the goods, a guarantor would be Chayev even without a Kenyan. Because since the sale is not consummated until the guarantor signs and the seller has his guarantee, this is called Koydim Matan Mois. The seller is releasing the goods in halacha. Again, nothing physically is changing, but he's allowing the transfer to take place in halacha only based on your arvos, and therefore the guarantor would be responsible for the goods, even though there was no kinyan. Now, another case where this comes up is what happens if a person borrows money, there's a mortgage, and he mortgages a piece of real estate. Now, very often, the borrower now wants to go ahead. He wants to sell the property. He wants to subdivide it. And he has a problem. There's a lien against this property. And that's preventing him from subdividing and from selling off what he wants to sell. Goes to the lender and says, can you please release this property? Lender says, no, this is my security. This is how I know I'm going to get paid back. So the borrower says, you know what? I'll find you an Arif. I'll find you someone who's willing to guarantee the loan. And you release the lien from this property. You release the mashal. So what is the halacha there? Now, certainly the loan happened months ago. It was la'achar matan mois. On the other hand, the lender is releasing the collateral on the arev seisod. Is that enough to make the arev responsible for the loan, for him to be chayv? So here the halacha is, yes. Because although the money is already gone, since you have a mashkin, you have collateral that you'll be used to collect it. So assuming the mashkin is worth the full value of the loan, releasing the mashkin is on the say-so of the arev, that is a sufficient hemne. You're putting your money at risk because of his word, and therefore the guarantor will be responsible even without any other king. Oh, very good. So the question is, what happens if the loan is for $1 million? This property is only worth $800,000. Because of the Arev's word, you're releasing the collateral. But the Arev is taking responsibility for the entire loan. So how do you deal with this situation? On one hand, there's $800,000 of collateral being released because of the Arev's word. On the other hand, we're trying to make him responsible for $1 million loan. So how do you deal with this? So the Radvaz begins by saying that it's mistavra that the Arev only becomes responsible for $800,000. Because if that was the value of the collateral, you want to know what was given, but how much he trusted you, what was given on your word? $800,000. And therefore, on the value of the collateral, you're going to be responsible. More than that, you won't be. Then the Radvaz says, maybe not. He says, because what was the lender thinking? How come the lender is lending $1 million on this property that's worth $800,000? Okay, that could be. That's probably the answer. But Zogdor Advaz, what happens sometimes is someone will come to borrow money from you, and you'll ask for collateral. He'll give you his wife's jewelry for collateral. Now, the loan might be for $10,000. The jewelry might be worth $5,000. But you know this person's shalom bayis is worth more than the loan. And therefore, even though from a financial sense, he's better off just saying, keep my wife's jewelry, I'm not paying you back. L'maisa l'didi shavali, to him it's worth the full amount, and he'll pay you back. Dr. Radvaz, if the lender was willing to extend this loan, and this collateral was enough, he was confident he would be able to recover the entire loan, so then forget about what its market value is today. By releasing the collateral that his expectation was that he'll be able to recover the entire amount, the Radvaz suggests you become the Ariv as well would have full responsibility. So even though only 800,000 was given over, since that 800,000 was expected to be used to recover the full value, we look at the full value, and that is the Radvaz is Chiddush. Shai Mishpah comes along and says, not so fast. He says, the second thing is, he says, is a Chiddush. It's true the lender hoped that the person's shalom bayis, he would pay the loan even though the property was underwater. And it's a hope. Maybe it's true, maybe it isn't true. But to create a chiyuv mamon, to make him responsible and make him already pay because of this aspiration, he says you can't. But then the Shaar Mishpat takes it a step further. He says now, once he argues on the first point, he says, what is the Radvaz? Well, according to the Radvaz's logic, $800,000 he has to pay, and $200,000 he doesn't because there's no money. So Shaham Mishpah brings down a halacha, which we discussed by Richos a while back. What is the halacha by every asmachta? A person, you sign a contract with someone. He's got to perform a certain task. So if he writes at the end, if I don't perform the task, I'm going to pay you all of your damages. The halacha is, if he doesn't perform, if he breaches the contract, he has to pay. He accepted responsibility for the damages, he's got to pay. What happens if he writes in the contract that if he doesn't perform the contract, he'll pay you $3 million. It's not liquidated damages. It's much more than the value of the loss caused by the breach. The halacha is, this is an asmachta. This is a gamble. The person signed it as a penalty with the expectation it'll never happen. Halacha, it's not enforceable. The question is, what happens when a person breaches? The penalty says he pays $3 million. So that we throw out. Does he at least have to pay the damage that he caused? So this is a machlokes rishonim. Now, again, in that particular case, there's another cheshbon which we're not going to go through, and in that case, you very often will have to pay. But what many rishonim say is you pay zero. Why? Because whenever you make an asmachta, if I breach the contract, I'll give you $3 million. We say this amount makes no sense. And you didn't really mean it when you said it. It's an asmachta, and it's laikanya. Once we say you didn't mean what you said, so if we didn't mean what you said, we take the whole contract, we throw it out. So if you would write, if I breach, I'll pay your damage, you meant that seriously, and you have to pay. But once you make it into a guzma, once you make it into an asmacht, if I breach, I'll pay you $3 million, since you're not serious, we throw out the entire contract. You don't even pay the damages. Zot Shaar Mishpat, who I didn't overhear. The Ariv said, release the $800,000 collateral, I'll guarantee $1 million. On part of it, that's an asmachta. On the part that you're not moitzi oitzai, the value, the amount that's worth more than the collateral, we say you didn't mean it seriously. Zok the Shaar Mishpat, once you have a deal, which part of it is an asmachta, he says the whole thing is an asmachta, and you toss out the entire arvus, he pays zero. Oh, very good, very good, very good. So we established that in a real arvos, where you were moitzi oitzayis al piv, you can't use asmachta as a defense. The problem here is, on the $200,000, on that, you're not a real ariv, because there's no moitzi oitzayis al piv. Zok the Shaar Mishpat, since part of this obligation is not arvos and it is an asmachta, once it's an asmachta, we throw out the whole obligation.
It's both.
Anytime I say I will pay you, when you're moitzah etzah salpiv, I'm an ari, then we have no problem of a smachta for the same reason, because you're moitzah etzah salpiv. The amount that I'm going to pay, which is not moitzah etzah salpiv, is, first of all, it's not an arvus, we need a kinyan, and second of all, it's an asmachta, because it was just done on the hope that you wouldn't come after me. Wait a second. So Shari Mishpat has a tremendous chiddush. He says, if you try to create an obligation more than the mashkin, the whole thing gets thrown away. The Divrei Ga'onim says, not so fast. He argues, I think, along the lines of what the point that you're raising. He says, in a case where you have, when you have one obligation, I'll pay you $3 million for breaching. So the whole thing is a guzma, you don't mean it at all. So there, since it's a guzma, we throw it out completely. We can't reform it and say, I'm going to pay the damages. However, he says, in a case where you do an action or you make a kinyan on part of it, and that works, even because the fact that you add extra doesn't take away from this part. And therefore, based on this svara, since on $800,000 it's an arvus, it's like you made a kinyan. Since on that part that's serious, it's like a maisa, it's like you gave the money already, he says, we would not say the Shar Mishpat Svara, and therefore $800,000 you will be responsible for. The other $200,000 above the value of the debt, that is not, you weren't Moitzi Atzas HaPiv, and that you'd be off the hook.